have a form of the board representing, do you leave it from the pledge?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item on the agenda is approval of the agenda. Are there any changes to the agenda? Is there a motion to accept the agenda? Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Next item is payment ratification for July 16th. Did anyone have any questions for Steve? Is there a motion to ratify the payments?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Next item on the agenda is approved invoice for LRPA. Did anyone have any questions that can be answered to open the session? Did anyone have any questions that need a closed session? Is there a motion to approve payment to LRPA?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Yeah.
Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Next item is approval of the invoice for Wiggins, Williams, and Wiggins. Did anyone have any questions for them? Is there a motion to approve the invoice, payment of the invoice for Wiggins, Williams, and Wiggins?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Next item on the agenda are the minutes of the July 12th meeting. Did anyone have any issues that have not already been addressed? Is there a motion for approval of the minutes of July 12th meeting, MRGC board meeting?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
I just want to say, commend everyone for doing an outstanding job on the meeting. So it's very great. Anyone have any other comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Items from the floor.
I took the liberty of writing a resolution for you guys that I'd like you to consider, because I figured, you know, we're kind of a citizens' legislature here and people should listen to us. So what I'd like to do is pass out these papers to you, and then I have a couple of comments to make. Do I give them to you?
Or
can I hand them to you directly? Is that okay?
Bernalillo County Commission, we can't do that.
No,
you can have a nice list of the
motion.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's getting the legislation.
Okay.
Sorry. And so my comments were not going to be about this yet, but I needed to comment on a couple of other things. Number one on my mind, of course, is the Los Padillas Estadia. And I wanted you guys to read the story. I want to call it to your attention in the newspaper. I wanted to let you know that Los Padillas Estadia has a new commissioner. His name is Michael Gather. It is under new management by court order. Most of the estadias will have the same problem. This one, they had a lot of illegal people voting here. I mentioned before that they had the garden hose. The Los Padillas Estadia said that they could, they had prevention instead of water rights and were allowed to vote whether they owned land, had a ditch, lived in the area, just as long as they had a family member who descended from somebody 300 years ago that qualified them as having pre-1907 water rights. And that pretty much was their case. But as you read through that, you'll see some gems in there. And I will probably be writing some other things about what they said about water rights, too, just so that people know about it. The other thing I want to say is I wanted to comment on the NAFTA thing from last week or 2 weeks ago. I wanted to let you know that if you didn't know, NAFTA has been planning this at least, I think, for 2 or 3 years. And the public in the South Valley had a lot of contact with NAFTA. They actually helped design, if you will, that they submitted their ideas. So what was submitted to you was a compilation of all the ideas that were gathered in the South Valley, including the fact that they would be discharging clean water, including including the fact that we needed to use the ditches to get drainage in our area. And I just needed to let you know that yesterday we had a huge rainstorm and we had to swim down Los Padillas Road all the way from Coors to Isleta through about 2 or 3 feet of water. And that was even today. Last night it was much worse. You couldn't even see the road. And then on my street again, everything turned down my road again. And because I have about a 2 to 3 foot high sandbag berm in my driveway, nothing came into my house. And by the way, I can do 250 sandbags with 3 people in 2 hours. That was the record that we set. So we're always standing by with shovels and sandbags. So the Imapa thing is really good for us. And I think it will be good for you because they're going to be cleaning the water before it returns to the river. And if you have not been reading the paper, I did a thing on the Imapa water flow engineering design shoot, I guess you would say. And this is a UNM. It's a long shoot, like what we did over in Denver. And they put the water in the chute at a certain CFS, and then they show you how they collect all the material that comes down those, down those arroyas or those, I don't know what they call them, the structures, the Imapa structures, and they're really quite clever. So if you've never seen that, I think perhaps you guys should take some time to find out about that. Now, that brings me to my resolution. One of the things I've been really big on Robert's Rules of Orders and moving the meeting forward and all that kind of stuff. And then it dawned on me that we need to we should be in sync with other governmental agencies and follow kind of the same regulations as they do. And the number one regulation that should be followed is that you elect your board chair and vice chair every year, not every 2 years. And so that would put you in sync kind of with the other governmental agencies. And since you have your elections in June, that means that you would want to have your election of your chair and vice chair every June. And then the other thing is, I was thinking I'd like to see it done in January, but it might get too confusing to have elections in January when MRGCD elections are in June. So I thought that might be a good idea. And then the other thing I decided was that if we can pass that, we can actually reorganize the board, and you can vote in a new board chairman, vice chair. It would take place immediately following the next board meeting. So that kind of makes sense. So if you do a change, you can do the change immediately, or you can wait until June to kind of institute your change. So I think that one thing I'd really like to see is I'd like you to elect a board vice chair every year. And that would make them more responsive to the public and more responsive to the board and more responsive to the staff. Again. So those are my comments. And if you have any questions, I sort of followed the form that you guys had on the website. So there was no legal help on this item. And I think I'll give our legal counsel one. Oh my gosh. And so I'm done. Okay, thank you. Any other items from the public?
Madam Chair.
Yeah, Director Sickman.
I think I'd like to make a motion. Ms. McCraw took the time to draft up this resolution. I'd like to make a motion that the board ask to have it placed on the agenda for our next meeting.
Do we have any issues on open meetings? I can't tell.
I think the only request is that it simply be put on the agenda for the next meeting. And so even whether or not you had a resolution.
Without your motion, that would be fine.
Yeah, if it's agreed by consensus, this would be on the agenda for the next meeting. Now, if you did not, that's basically what you're asking.
You made a motion, so that's done.
Sure, I just, it's not my, I guess I could just ask to have it put on the agenda for the next meeting, but it's not my resolution. It comes from someone else drafted this. I thought it would be more appropriate if the board decided they wanted to put it on the agenda.
Either way, the problem, remember, Madam Chair and Member Sicko, the only thing is I did ask specifically whether we could make motions that arose out of items from the floor. And she said, well, that might be pushing the edge of it to respond basically on that from the floor, since there's nothing on the agenda that's close to this. But I guess if the board puts in the minute that by consensus this is going to be on, even though it's drafted by a person from the public, that would be it. It would be on the agenda for next time. That's all I have to say.
but it can still be put on the agenda by then.
It can be put on the agenda by Ms. Porter Sickler. Sure. He's asking for a board consensus or he said motion.
Yeah.
He wants more than that. He'd like to have the board take action, give express consensus that we'd like it on. So I think that's a specific request of the board at this point as well.
So should we change the motion to consensus?
Yeah. Express consensus of the board that we placed on the action next time.
So that's okay. So is that right with you?
That's fine.
So is there consensus of the board? Is the board agree about that?
Yes, fine.
Director Lincoln?
Yes, fine.
Anyone else?
Yes.
Okay, so I see nodding everywhere, so let the record show there was consensus to put that resolution on the agenda the next 4 days.
Yeah. Madam Chair, we probably should. This isn't in the proper form. We should look at it in the proper form so that it's so that it's readable. And no offense to the drafter, but we could do that if you'd like us to do so that everybody can see what it says.
Sure, I think that probably would be a good idea. So the intent of it doesn't change.
Yeah.
Were there any other office reports?
Yes, good evening. I think it's a great idea. I actually want to state your name for the record, please. Susan Pine, 2736 Elizabeth Theatre in South Bend. And I thought we could do a little history lesson this evening for those of you on the board that are not foreigners. Back to 2000, 2001, 2002, as you may or may not remember if you're not a farmer, we had a terrible time because we had no snowpack and we had no water. And we had a person that runs the district that went to the city and made an agreement with his hat in hand, I assume. Oh, I don't think he wears a hat. Made an agreement with the city to use water for the silver minnow and for our farmers. I think it was very well done. I don't think he had a babysitter or somebody to hold his hand. And I think he would now pay them back. And I think sometimes it would be wise for us to remember some of the things that people in this district have done and think about them. I respect them for it. Thank you.
Any other comments from the public? Next item on the agenda, blue groundwater. Please let out for the technology issues. There he comes.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. Thank you for inviting me to come and present to you tonight. Chairperson Jarrett invited us to come and give a preliminary assessment of the drinking water project data. And by way of a background, for those of you who aren't familiar, back in July of 2009, MRGCD experienced delivery shortages on the Isleta version. And in October of that year, Blue Groundwater was retained to undertake a study of the drinking water project data and the hydrology of the river to see if there's any relationship between the shortage and the operation of the drinking water project. In December of the year, we met with Mr. David Ginsworth of the district and discussed the data exchange of the district's data and the drinking water project data, and discussed the matter study. Following a public data request made to the Public Review Bernalillo County Water Utility, their data was delivered in July of this year. Now, what I'll be discussing tonight and showing hydrologic data on, in addition to the drinking water project, is what's called the middle reach of the Middle Rio Grande, about the San Felipe Gauge, at the top of the map there, down to the Isleta Diversion. There are several gauges in between that are shown with a little black and white cross. The drinking water project diversion is right there, not the middle of the middle reach. Above and below it are USGS gauges. Down several miles below is the Rio Grande and Albuquerque gauge, which is at the central ridge. The return flow from Albuquerque's water comes back to the river at the Southside Water Reclamation Plant. And then there's the Rio Grande Isleta gauge above the Isleta here. This shot shows an aerial photo close up near the area of the drinking water project diversion. You can see this red line is depicting where their bladder dam is. The way that the city or the water authority operates is they inflate a bladder dam. They store water, pound water behind the dam, which raises the head and allows water to flow into the diversion structure. We estimate that when they raise the dam, 2 feet and pounds between 50 and 100 acre feet of water, which, depending on river flows and conditions, can interrupt downstream flows on the river with 100 or a couple hundred CFS or similar. The other thing that this backwater area, this county water, does is it affects the data at the Alameda Ridge gauge right up here. Part of our work was discussing this with the USGS to find out how they plan to take care of this. They acknowledge that they have a backwater effect and that they'll see a stage rise without a concurrent change in river flows. They're trying to work out a plan to deal with the data, but so far you still see these backwater effects in the gauging data, and I'll point some of that out. Down here near the bottom of the map is the Rio Grande Alameda gauge. I'll be showing you data for both of these gauges as well as the gauges below. This chart shows the data, the hourly data that was delivered to MRJCD from the Drinking Water Project. The upper panel, shows in blue the Southside Water Reclamation Plant return flow varying from about 30 to about 70 CFS every day. The red lines show the Drinking Water Project hourly diversion. The thing to note in this chart is early in their project, in the timeline at the bottom, is from December 2008 to June 2010. And the thing to note in the upper panel is their diversions during the first year or so of operation. They were operating fairly high diversions, and a lot of time that they weren't diverting at all. And it looks like from the data later in 2010, late 2009, they began to operate with a fairly steady diversion, a few excursions into higher diversions for peaking, and a few times shut off, but not very often. The lower panel in purple shows their data, the Drinking Water Project data, on the pool height behind the bladder dam. You can see early in the project, they were operating the dam quite a bit, up and down, 2 feet or so. And again, that stores water when they raise the dam, and it releases that same water when they lower, which can impact river flows below the diversion. Later in the project, they appear to be operating with a more steady dam height until about the last couple of months. And by the way, I encourage you, if you have any questions while I'm talking, please go ahead and ask them. While the chart is up, you need to wait.
It was my understanding that I'm trying to remember, but in December 08, they weren't mixing. They just got to 50% mixing, I thought, just fairly recently. And so, were they diverting even if they weren't mixing yet? And what were they doing with the water? They diverted, and now are they at full? I mean, are they only going to mix 50%, or are they going to, I mean, is it always going to be blended, or is there some future point where it'll be
When you say mixing, do you mean between surface water and groundwater? I think their plan, I don't know the schedule specifically, but I believe their plan is each year to increase the amount of water they divert from the Rio Grande and lower the amount of water they take out of the wells. I'll show you a couple of the table in the next chart or two that shows the statistics of what they diverted in 2009, what they diverted so far in 2010. And they're going about twice, they're diverting about twice as much this year as they did last. Chuck, do you know what their schedule is on that?
I know it's on the internet, though.
They've laid the schedule on.
They're moving up fairly quickly.
I think I said everything I want to say about that. This shows some of the operations in terms of what they report and also what we glean out of the data that they deliver. The DWP's drinking water project in Keys, their non-potable diversion, which is a small couple thousand acre feet diversion that they take to use, I think, for landscaping and golf courses. In 2009, they diverted about 21,000 acre feet. In 2010, so far, the first half, they diverted that much. It looks like they're headed for diverting about twice what they did last year. The reported San Juan release are about around 10,000 acre feet. To offset half of the diversion. The baseline, the treatment plant returns, the wastewater treatment plant returns, which are in the baseline, these returns would happen whether they ran the drinking water project or not, average about 60,000 acre feet a year. Statistically, in 2009, their median diversion rate was around 25 CFS. This year, it's about double that. However, they seem to be operating with a little lower peak rate, peak hour rate, peak daily rate. They're taking more water, but at a little more steady rate, less peak. And as I mentioned earlier, we estimate the bladder dam, when it's raised, 2 feet will account about 1,500 acre feet.
So I have a question. Do you have any information on their groundwater pumping and what and that? How that, because that relates to the wastewater treatment plant returns.
Yes, they furnished quite a bit of groundwater data, data. We did not take a look at that in conjunction with this yet.
Well, I'm just wondering, would that be part of the plan to look at the overall depletion? You still have depletions coming from your groundwater pumping, so you still have that cone of depression, and then you have that and offsets built in with that, plus the diversions here out of the river.
Yeah, the study we did back in I think it was about 2004. My colleagues did looked at that specifically. I think the plan was just to see how this new data compared to that old study. That old study was looking at average annual depletions. Now we're looking at hourly. I'm not sure how those look to me.
I think it was an update of the old study, so I think it would include that analysis.
Yeah,
as well.
There was a task to compare those. I haven't undertaken that just yet.
Mr. Shaw?
You say that the return flow is 30 CFS to 70 CFS?
Yeah.
So quite often they may have 30 CFS?
Every day it varies between about 30 and about 70. And the peaks tend to come in the morning, and the valleys tend to come late in the afternoon.
Okay, so
if you don't mind, I'll
see. The minimum required for them to provide is 50%, or at least if they would take 50 CFS, they have to take 50 CFS from daily flow, so they should provide us 50 CFS minimum. So if they have 30, then we would lose 20 CFS.
I believe that's the way that the permit is conditioned, is that
they're shorting
whatever native water they take, returning the same amount.
If they don't have any return, what do they do?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Jones?
Yeah. My recollection was the permit condition was pretty specific. It says that you have to match up at the same time the amount of native water you divert and the San Juan County. You have to, at the same time, you have to put the same amount back in as return flow so there's no net change. Otherwise, could have a substantial lag.
Yes. And that's true, and if you, I'll show you a chart near the end of the presentation that shows you what they did during the June of this year, part of June, about a week or two of June. And they are diverting, they're maximizing their diversions at about the same time that the treatment plant is at its peak. But what's interesting about that is there is a lag, as Chuck just pointed out. I'm going to focus on that. And it's about 8 hours, 8-9 hours between the drinking water project and the return flow. So if they're peaking at the same time, by the time that peak gets down to the treatment plant, it's actually back down into its valley. So you actually get a hit with a higher diversion. At the same time, you're minimizing your return flows. So it's a tendency to, the effect is additive instead of canceling out. I'll show you that in a later slide. I should emphasize, this is all very preliminary look at this data. We just got it early in the month. We had to convert it from text into using OCR into digital data. Charted up, and we looked at it, we found a few things. This is a preliminary assessment, and there's still quite a bit to look at. So these are preliminary conclusions that we're done.
Madam Chair, just on that point, we did ask the city utility to give us this data in electronic form. Steve Curtis specifically requested, we never got it, so they had to convert it, which was a little effort. So we're hopeful that we can get the cooperation in the future, getting it in the form.
Well, and this is the data that was gotten under a Public Records Act request, right? After months of frustration of asking for the data. And so, I mean, this is a long time coming to get this.
Any other
questions?
One question I have was, they're already taking more than twice the amount of water. They're diverting it already, and they're using less than half.
Are you talking about when you say less than half?
Yes, they're using only 9,978 feet. They're taking 23,000, 24,000 feet.
That's what it looks like. Yeah. Now, this chart is to the uninitiated, it's really a statistical chart. It's called the duration curve. Hydrologists look at these all the time. I'll try to explain it without seeing eyes glass over. But what it essentially shows on the left axis is the diversion rate in CFS on a log scale of the drinking water operation. And these are this is the hourly data. I split it into 2 years, 2009 and 2010, for comparison's sake. Now the x-axis, the bottom axis, the horizontal one, that is the fraction of time that a particular rate is going to be exceeded. So for example, at half of the time, 50% of the time, which is called the median, they diverted in 2009 about 25 CFS, that's the number I put on last year. This year, it's about twice that, 50 CFS, diverting half the time, 50 or more CFS. The other thing this chart shows is that in 2009, about 65% of the time they were diverting out. The other third of the time they weren't. It was zeroed out. They were shut down. This year is only about 5% of the time they're not diverting. So 95% of the time the project is diverting water. Now, I'm going to show you a series of charts here after this one. Where for a particular week or so in July of 2009, river flows were low enough, they were operating the project in such a way that you could track their project effects down the river. Doesn't happen too often. There's a lot of noise in the river. When the river flows high, it's hard to pick out a small, 100 CFS out of several thousand. And in this particular instance, we have good data that shows how the drinking water project operation propagates down there. But this chart shows a flood about the same time. They came in down the Amavka Ditch, hit the river, 2,000 CFS flood from a big rainstorm out there. And what it shows is how a wave moves down the river, just for an example, so you get the idea of what I'm talking about. And also to figure out what the timing is of a perturbation around the drinking water project, how long it takes to get down to the Isleta diversion, Isleta gauge. So the tall blue line is the gauge right above drinking water project. This flood hit it. About an hour later, it gets to the gauge painted in red, an Alameda gauge about a mile downstream. And then several hours later, it gets to Rio Grande and Albuquerque gauge, the second bridge. Another many hours later, it gets to the Isleta Lake gauge. So it's about 12 hours from drinking water project down to the Isleta Lake gauge, and then a couple hours more to the Isleta conversion. So using those sort of ballpark numbers in general travel times, we estimate it's 8 or 9 hours from the drinking water project for a particle or a wave or perturbation to travel down to the wastewater treatment. And then from there, another 7 or 8 hours to get to the Isleta conversion. Right. So with that in mind, I've got a series of charts. It's sort of like an animation. I'm going to bring in all these successive gauges down the stream and show you how their diversion days propagates down the river. This shows about 1 week toward the end of July last year. The red lines are the diversions to the drinking water project, about 120 CFS, roughly 8 hours a day, starting about midnight each day. The blue line is the reclamation plant controls. And they're varying 30 to 70 CFS with a peak about midday. And the valley, the low point, right in the late morning, the peak, late at night. The low point is just about 8 hours later than the start of the diversion, and a compounding effect from this. The other interesting thing is the pool height is affected by it. Every time you take a diversion, the dashed line shows the pool height. The height below the dam of the water goes down about a half point. It comes back up when they're done. And what I'll show you is the gauge upstream does the same thing. It drops down and it comes back up. So, here's a couple of the gauges upstream of the project. San Felipe, and then the one immediately above the Alameda Bridge. You can see each time that they take 120 CFS for 3 hours, that gauge drops down. That's not actual change in flow, it's change in stage. And the USGS hasn't corrected that data for that change in stage.
So that means that it's a change in, so as being a change in stage, not a change in flow, does that mean that the gauges are reading a higher flow than it's actually there?
Yes, the gauge shouldn't change. It should be flat. But they've got a backwater effect every time something happens mm-hmm. with that.
So they need to compensate. So it's misleading about how much water is coming down the river when you look at like their daily report or whatever. It's actually, if this impact means that's not really an accurate gauge anymore. Is that right?
And USGS acknowledges that. This is one of their worst gauges. Aside from the bladder dam, it's a very unstable channel. You throw the bladder dam in and any variability there, they call their data bad or fair report.
So if those gauges aren't right, then it makes it even more difficult to track, right?
It does make it difficult to track, yeah. And I think the gentleman who's their fuel operator for the GS is working up a plan to make to compensate for this. And at the time I spoke with him, which was probably 6 months ago, they weren't sure how to do it, and they haven't corrected the data that's on the web as we speak. That big blue dot I put on there, because we're going to follow that dot as it hits each successive gauge. It's really just to help your eye follow this, because it's going to turn into kind of a spaghetti bowl. Okay, I'm going to turn on the next gauge downstream. You see the same 100 CFS or so divot into the river flows, and if you follow along, you can see it happen each time the drinking water project takes a diversion. And you can see that it shifts a little in time. It's about an hour later when that effect hits that gauge. Here's the gauge down at Central, and a few hours later, the whole hydrograph shifted up a little because there's some return flow within the Rio Grande Conservancy District, but you can still see that the river flow has been cut into by about 100 CFS. Here's the Isleta Lake gauge, many hours later. And finally, this is the Isleta diversion. These data come from the DOR archive site. We still want to get in, get Middle Rio Grande Conservancy District's data in here, because that's the final one. That's the good data. David Gensler's going to provide that. So this is preliminary, but it comes from the BOR archive. And what it looks like is that this last little wave here cuts in slightly to these letter groups. What we think is happening here is part of the water that's being spilled past this letter is hitting about 70 CFS at the end. And the other 30 CFS is hitting these letter groups. Now, under different river flow conditions, lower or higher, the outcome will be different. At a lower flow, we expect probably a higher percentage would have been this lab in this particular case. Now, the reason I show you this particular week is because the noise in the river and the way that the city was operating the project lend themselves to following that effect down the river and seeing something happening in the actual design.
Could you go over one more time about how you kind of divided up the 70 and 30?
Sure. It looks like it's about, and I'm very much rounding these figures, about 100 CFS of effect when the project gets down to the isolated diversion area, to the isolated diversion area. Only 30 CFS appears to be cut out of the hydrograph here. Well, we assume the other 70 CFS fell on the water that was going over the down the river.
So it was whatever deliveries were downstream, whether those were BOR for the minnow or whatever, but that was the, because that's after runoff, so it wouldn't have been buried in that, so that was some of these releases that it was impairing.
Now the caveat, of course, this is all preliminary. Okay. It's using preliminary data on the BOR site that hasn't had the David Gensler check. And I believe this is also preliminary USGS data that hasn't had their final check. But obviously there's an effect that you can trace under certain river conditions. Now, this is how they're operating just this last month in June. The red line is their hourly diversions. You can see they're peaking their diversions at midnight. Minimizing them throughout the day. Each line is a day, by the way. The green data is what they have recorded as their daily diversion. You see, it comes out as an average between the high and low. This is the available San Juan trauma shown in blue. We have just a little bit of that information that Chair Jarrett sent over. We don't have the full record from 2008 when they began operating, but it's on the list of data to be requested. And finally, the purple line up and down at the bottom is reclamation plan return flow. They appear to be operating so that they peak their diversions at the same time the plant is peaking its returns, which seems to be following their conditions.
So what explained that one really big drop?
On this chart?
Yeah. I mean, I would think it would be fairly consistent. So what, and I mean, they both had a real drop in their diversion, and what explains that?
I don't know. This is one of the big, one of the tasks I think is very important in this is actually to sit down with the operators of the drinking water project and find out how they operate. We're making a few assumptions on the basis of looking at their data, but we haven't had the chance to sit down and talk to them and see exactly how they operate. And so I'm not sure why there's such a low flow in the middle of the day.
Would that be the wastewater treatment plant shutting down? Because it goes to almost zero.
It's
kind of what it looks like if they shut it down for a little while.
Yeah, it's possible. But I'm not sure if it's what they do with the water that's accumulating when they shut down like that. They may have the storage capacity for it.
Did you check to excuse me, Director? Do you Did you check to see if the reported diversions really are an average, or is just kind of observationally an average?
Right now, I'm eyeballing it, but we plan to check that and compare it against sample and Chana waters when we get those data. We run all those statistics, but this is sort of the first cut, the first look, more of a cursory glance than a detailed look. Let's dig into the data. Other questions?
I have a question. Just, I know we're looking at a lot of looking at data from 2008 and 2009, and seeing what's going on this year. Do they seem to be getting any better as far as evening out their diversions? I thought I saw something that looked like it wasn't quite as severe maybe this year as it was last year. I don't know.
The one thing I think from the chart, the series of charts I showed earlier to this chart, when they were operating during that last July, they were going at a high rate on 20 CFS for 8 hours and then shutting down to zero. I think that probably has more of an impact, and therefore is easier to trace down the river than operating at a low rate and a little bit higher rate.
So possibly they're learning as they go along a little bit.
I think that what I see in that data is they're trying to conform to what the permitting conditions are. But the only downside hydrologically is that when they ramp up their diversion, it takes 8 hours for that effect to get down to the reclamation plant. By then, the plant is starting to taper off and go down and release less water. At the same time, they have a higher diversion, they've got a lower pressure.
I thought I saw on one of your charts that it showed backaways that it showed basically.
Is it this one?
Yeah, it was.
Was it that duration curve?
But it showed. It wasn't that one, but it showed the diversions and the return flows. I think that's the one right there.
Yeah.
And doesn't it show the diversion at the same time day being lower as the same time they're diverting more? But if you figure it takes 8 hours for have that effect reach down the river, then according to your chart, they would be putting more water into the river. When that lull in water from the diversion got down to the treatment plant, they would actually be putting more water in the river than they would at the time they were diverting. Well, that's what it appears to me by looking at the chart, but I don't know.
What I see is the leading edge of that when they just start to divert.
Right.
That's about midday.
Okay.
Right about the time they start, the return flows start to diminish. It's 8, 9 in the morning. There's about the 8 hour, 9 hour lag between those two. So what I see in this is they just start diverting, takes 8 hours, and that's about the time the treatment plant starts to diminish.
So I guess that's what I'm asking. That line, the red line at the top where it goes straight across and in diversion, that's about an 8 hour time period.
Yeah, they're diverting for about 8 hours.
Okay,
yeah, that
so
shows the lines are 12 hour lines. Yeah. 12 hours. I have just a couple more charts with some very preliminary findings and conclusions. Just reiterating, the authority diverted about 21,000 acre feet in 2009. They diverted about that much already in the first half of 2010. Their median diversion rate is about 50 CFS. Their maximum is about 120. Find just with this very preliminary look at what DWP can impact the Isleta diversion under certain river conditions, low flow, 550 CFS or less. And then we find that just on the basis of that preliminary data, it looks like in June, the example of June, it impacted the Isleta diversion around 20-30 CFS. That number would be higher the lower the river.
And I guess if question, I don't know if it's for you or for Mr. Dumars, but if the total impact was 100 CFS, which I think you mentioned earlier, this may be for Mr. Dumars, if that river, if, you know, what he's talking about is assessing 30 CFS against the district of that 100 CFS loss, and the other 70 is against flows that are past the dam. If those are reclamation flows, for example, reclamation, I mean, at some point in the future, the reclamation demand that that impact not be felt by the mill and their flows, but fully absorbed by the district. I mean, what's the deal with that?
Yeah, the question you're asking is, once we are using San Juan Chama water, we're matching up with that water. And if the net result of the diversions is to have an effect of 20 to 30 CFS, and understand, as I understand that, that's in 2009, and they only diverted about 21,000 acre feet. The total plan for diversion, when this is fully operable, is going to be around 100,000 acre feet. And so I can see that number, even if it's just linear, the number could be 60 CFS, but I can see the significant, depending on how low the flows are, I can see that number growing, getting bigger in proportion, based upon the amount that they divert. I don't think it's going to be strictly linear. I think it could be bigger effects. So the answer is, yeah, it could have an effect. I think what were you going to say?
Yeah, well, my question was more about, because he's saying that right now, in 2009, the river felt about 100 CFS
yes.
in effects.
Mm-hmm.
But what he saw at the Isleta diversion structure for emergency cities was about 30 of it, so that means
right.
70 of it was in the flows past the dam,
yes.
which would have been perhaps reclamation flows.
Mm-hmm.
These were the past runoff. So I was wondering if at some point in the future that wouldn't have the whole 100 CFS or whatever the number is in the future be against the district because of the ESA issues.
Yeah, because if we have a minimum stream flow obligation we're committed to do, then of course it's going to affect the district directly in that way. But I guess I have a second point I wanted to make. Casey, you correct me if I'm wrong. Shaw made been making this point for years, and that is that before there was no drinking water project, you had a lot of pumping in past years, but it was always all made up by groundwater returning flows.
Mm-hmm.
So you were taking groundwater out of the ground and making up for past pumping and trying to reach equilibrium. Now, the return flows that come out of the sewage treatment plant are no longer groundwater flows, they are simply San Juan Chama water that's been diverted. So you're basically, you are increasing the effects on the river, the full amount of the groundwater that they previously committed to the river and now are not. And that, where that takes me, Casey, is this question, how much do we really know about the effects of the past pumping? There are two kinds of diversions. One is the physical diversion, and the other one is the groundwater past pumping that's hitting the river. And if we're not right on that, then you've got a real, to me, you can't analyze them in a vacuum, both of them together. That's why I'm curious to see what happens when you look at the groundwater. And that's Shaw's point all along, is that there's a net.
A couple of points, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, go ahead.
I think we are getting hit three times before we get San Juan Chama water in Albuquerque. It's not hard to us. We can get it in San Juan. So we lost that one. At the same time, when they take the 50 CFS or whatever they want to take it, they take the initial 50 CFS, which was for the district ready for. We are not getting that one. Plus, we are not getting the ready for credit, which to the 100%. Now we're getting only the amount which is worth. So you are seeing the effect on that one. That's what is causing some of the problems with the district. You can do a lot of body about there, the San Juan Chama water. But the water which we are looking at is for Mino. We have an agreement that if the currency effort is coaching, we have to give it to the currency effort and shut the dam. So they don't take the losses on that one. It's only the district who takes the losses.
I'll just comment on what you both said. You're right. Whether the drinking water project existed or not, the river would receive 30 to 70 CFS from treatment plant. That's what the people of Albuquerque use. That's what they return to the river, whether it comes from groundwater or not. As they shift over to the drinking water project and shift away from the wells, now they're taking the San Juan water and native water, putting it in the system, and returning it. The rates are different. There's a hit on the river, and as Chuck pointed out, there's still a large groundwater deficit to be made up as they stop pumping the wells and the river replenishes that storage. That was what my colleagues looked at mostly in our 2004 study, and what you alluded to dovetailing into this study, which is
because the San Juan Chong water was previously used to offset that groundwater pumping, and now it's being directly diverted to the cones of the fresh you're still drawing in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyone on board? Any questions? Well, I look forward to seeing what happens when you get a chance to analyze it more and to look at MRGC's data. Mr. Sanchez, any question?
I'm Lynn Sanchez from Kibo Pueblo. I got in your presentation late, so I didn't hear all the information you provided. How does the return flows from the side drains affect the numbers that you're showing? I didn't see any data about the flows there, and they're up, down, same, static.
Very good question. That is that's part of the pending work we need to do is to add in MRGCD's flows and make sure that we've got those accounted for. They're not adding to the perturbation or misleading us on how the effects propagate down the river.
So at this point, you don't know if the return flows could be the cause of the 20 to 30 CFS less
smog? I don't believe they are because what we see in the data is a pretty clear correlation between the drinking water project coming on and away 100 CFS less water moving down the river through the various stages.
Okay, thanks.
So you're saying 100 CFS less, but if the drains are contributing to the river, then the actual loss might be more than 100 CFS.
Well, the way we... More than 100 CFS. Well, what the drains will do is they'll take the entire hydrograph and boost it up. In fact, I'll just show you. You can see it in... It's a little cleaner here. You see how the Rio Grande at Albuquerque gauge, actually, it still has the dip in it, but the whole... hydrograph is flowing a little higher than the preceding gauges. That's probably for variance from the given return flow. They're usually pretty steady, but they're worth looking at to see how they affect the data.
I have a question.
And Dr. Sippen.
So are you looking at the outflows of the drains? Or it seems to me like it could be either way. I mean, you look at July there, when that happened, it might have been really hot. There might have been a big demand on irrigation water, and maybe the outflow from the drains was decreased. That could be a cause of some of the drop. So, do you guys look at the? Are you looking at the?
Yes.
Outflows of the drains.
That's planned for once. If Gensler gets us in his data, we'll bring it in. If for some reason we can't, we can use at least preliminarily the BOR data, but we only brought in the Isleta diversion, and I looked a little bit at one of the drains that's right near the drinking water project.
It just seems like if we're going to get to the bottom of the problem, we've got to
go
plug in all the data.
Yeah. I'm with you. It's full accounting is needed to make sure that you don't miss anything.
And hopefully David will get that to you before too long. Anyone else have any questions or comments? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. It's great. Looks like it's a great start, but I know you haven't had the data very long.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been pretty quick. So thank you very much. Appreciate it. Next item on the agenda. These reports from Reclamation, and I understand that Reclamation won't have anyone here. So we have those reports. Do you have any comments you want to make on that, Mr. Shaw?
And Chair, you already have the report. I mean, this is information from the DOR regarding the changes and the information. As far as the MRGC is concerned, we're demanding on the final CFS right now because of the heavy rain. OTP has cut some flood storage about 2,000 feet at this time. Currently, there is no water being released from the Alvaro for our use. We are saving the water which we have in Alvaro right now. This may last maybe a few days, maybe 3-4 days. If it keeps raining, it will last longer. So we will be saving about 1,500 feet per day, which we still use before. We are going to get back the summer time of water, which we have allowed the city barber and the doctors to use the new season, so they are paying us back now. So we'll be getting another 13,300 feet of water. So we'll have current storage as well, about 150,000 feet. And that's about it we have right now. It's good for the rain, and we're going to be really happy, I guess.
As long as you don't have any damage. So I guess we still kind of have that issue where they've got the, on their little bar chart, blue bar chart, where they've got the 55 CFS coming out of Abiquiu, that's 110 out of Cochiti, and I know we heard the explanation on that a lot, but that 110 CFS, see if I've got it right, is what they're diverting, and they're assuming it will come back in at the wastewater treatment plant after that.
This is one of the questions we have. If they take 55 CFS more,
right,
if there are not enough return flows available at the treatment plant, then they're suffering from it.
Okay. Anyone have any questions on that that Sean might be able to answer? We could stand in for reclamation. What's from your opinion, affairs? Mr. Shaw.
Good evening, Madam Chair, and the directors, and the staff. I have something different to report for a change. We've had 13 negotiation meetings since July 14th of last year, and the BIA has made the decision to proceed with a contractor pending further negotiations for a new agreement. We announced that at our negotiation meeting last Tuesday, and there's a whole variety of issues that come up with that. And tomorrow we're planning on meeting, and I made a mistake in my report here. I said 9 o'clock in the morning, and it's 1:30 in the afternoon, so please correct that. That's 1:30 tomorrow afternoon here at the district to begin dealing with some of the issues that come up. Madam Chair, if you think it would be proper, I can mention some of the issues.
It's going to come,
you know, Director Bates. On that first item, it says the BIA decision. Was there any input from the coalition?
Yes, we've been talking to the coalition about this since June. And I've tried to give them an objective view of some of the difficulties in my face going down this path. We've had some frank discussions about it.
When did you take it to the coalition?
In June. The coalition meets once a month with the governors and their staff. And so in the June meeting, I gave it to them as a written report, if I remember correctly.
When did it happen?
It would be the first Thursday in June, if I thereabouts. And then we met with them again, I believe it was July 3rd, and also discussed it more at length in that meeting, in the July 3rd meeting.
So sometime before early June, before the 1st of June, BIA made the decision to go forward with the contractor?
We did most of our, if I remember correctly, we did most of our market research in June. And we let the coalition know we were looking at that direction. And anyway, based on our market research, we decided in July that that's all we would like to do. And we wanted, you know, to run it by the coalition. No one said, no, don't do it. One coalition has expressed concern in terms of layoff Native Americans in the Cochiti Division. And that's a real concern, and we flag to them that that's a possibility if we go down this path. And so we try to give a realistic picture of, you know, some of the things that can happen going down this path.
I just personally, being on the team, it would have been nice to know that you had made that decision so we could have avoided some of the meetings, because it seems to me the decision was made by BIA, and it would have been nice to put the negotiations in advance until the coalition returned with an up or down, so we would know kind of where we were standing, because at the last meeting it was surprising.
Well, we could have backed out depending on what the district presented at the last meeting. If the district had presented something different, then, you know, we are not so far along this path we can't turn back.
But you indicated that the 683,000, whatever it was your absolute final offer. It was also your initial offer.
We said that the historical invoicing method, that's the basis of 7 years of payments between the BIA and the district, was our final offer.
I'm not sure I'd agree that it's a representation of 7 years, but those are discussions that were had in negotiations. Go ahead, go on.
Okay, well, some of the issues that are going to come up is the idea of the contractor working in the district right away. We'll probably need an interagency agreement to iron out some details with that. Emergency services, you know, what happens if we have a breach canal in the middle of the night, and who takes care of it? Delineation of PNP and newly reclaimed land work, lines of communication. Layoffs, a back out plan if the BIA decides if they go down this road and decide it's not working, we want to discuss.
Paying duty plus price of the money, huh?
What's that again? The price is going to go up. Anyway, that was something that was brought up last Tuesday, something that we need to discuss. And construction standards, those are seven of the issues that came up last Tuesday. And we'll be discussing them tomorrow.
Thank you.
Okay.
It's going to be done for $600,000 plus whatever there. What happened,
Mr. Beta? I can't say how much it's going to be done. Oh, this is going out in, you know, I don't know who the potential bidders are. So, but
what happens to the rest of the money? How are you going to account for the rest of the money? Or whoever's in charge.
Okay. If the contractor comes in below our allocated amount, our annual allocation, we will work with Pueblos in terms of offering it to them under their 638 contracts for them to be work. And so they, as long as it meets the criteria, you know, for that money, they can contract it.
So there'll be two contracts.
Well, the way we have an interagency agreement with the Bureau of Reclamation, and the Bureau of Reclamation has one of the contracts. So if Pueblo indicates they want to contract that money, we use the interagency agreement and move it to the existing 638 contracts with BOR. Now there's three Pueblos that are still working on those 638 contracts, but three Pueblos already have those 638 contracts in place.
Perspective, the board's always been most concerned with the constituents of the district, which are the farmers on the ground. And I think that this could be, I mean, I'm all for the contract a bit, but I think that it could be problematic for some of the farmers. It could be confusing when you have you know, a contractor doing maintenance work and stuff, and the lines of communication, how that flows. And my interests are in the, and I think the board's interests are primarily going to be with the individual farmers and making sure that they're well served by it, because they're the constituents. And so I think that that's, we need to be on the record saying that that's our concern.
Madam Chair, I guarantee you that's my concern. And we're going to work our hardest to provide the best service we can to the farmer. That is my concern, without a doubt. And we're going to go after it with a zeal. If I was going to be here, I'd be really in my whole heart to that. If that brings up another subject we can get into here in a second.
Just for things you're going to talk about tomorrow, you said one of the issues, delineation of PNP versus newly reclaimed lands and allocations of responsibility.
That's correct.
So if you have a ditch that starts down by the river and that has some, winds down by the river where there's PNP land, then goes up above and takes advantage of the new works, and there's some newly reclaimed lands there, and then it swings back down, and I mean, how do you envision the district and the contractor dividing up the work on a ditch that affects both PNP and newly reclaimed land?
What I'm proposing, Chuck, is a proration based on acreage. So the NRL lands are 57% of Indian ag lands, and the prior Paramount lands are 43%. There's different ways to go about it. It can be done geographically, which becomes really challenging because of the example you just presented. Another way to do it is doing activity-based delineation, where approximately 43% of the cost of O&M would be the PNP work, and we would come up with activities that would amount to about 43% of the total cost. And then the PIA contractor would do the 57% and do it like an activity-based delineation.
I guess in the past, we've always finessed the question, what is newly reclaimed and what's PNP lands? Just said, let's use large percentages. But all the ditches vary in kind. Some require a tremendous amount of work. Some require very little work. Some of the PNP lands may require more because of the nature of where they're located and geography, probably they may require less. So it seems like it's going to be a sophisticated calculus to figure out how to do that, to make it fair. Because, you know, using percentages when it's the same entities is one thing. When you're trying to divide up and negotiate with a private contractor, and the private contractor says, wait a minute, I didn't promise to do that. My contract only covers this, and I'm done. You guys do it. I mean, that's going to be it. I think those negotiations, this is my, you know, and I'm for privatization, but I think those negotiations and the ultimate generation of a map to define what is PNP versus newly reclaimed, that would be a sophisticated issue. Doesn't mean it can't be done, but I don't know if you think so, but I think it's sophisticated.
And tomorrow we'll start hashing that out and see if, you know, we can kind of come up with a game plan on how to do that. We would like to have this contractor on board by September 1st. So we're down to 5 weeks to iron out that stuff.
Okay. Thank you. That's all right.
Director, thank you.
I guess one of my concerns, I'm always standing up with the employees, you're going to have a bunch of angry people to coach you, angry at BIA.
Especially
the way the economy is now.
Right.
And I'm going to be angry too.
Right.
If I see any of the people laid off.
Yeah.
Or their jobs terminated.
In the market research I've done, I've explained the situation to contractors. And let them know it's a big concern. And I've gotten a call from the attorney at some Mingo expressing that he's concerned. And so we are definitely looking at that.
So the contractor's going to hire those people to do the same thing?
The contracting officer said, I cannot write into a contract. I cannot mandate a contract that he hires laid off employees of the district. So,
or that he hires Pueblo members?
What's that?
Can you dictate that he hires Pueblo members?
I believe there's an Indian preference clause that the Indian preference doesn't mean that it's an Indian that's been laid off. So in other words, you have Indian preference.
That's a separate question.
Yeah.
I think this point is not very well thought out, and we feel that your pricing with your contract may not be agreeable to us either. So when we have to work 43% of the time on PNP land. So there are some issues which we have and we need to work, and there may be our concerns and questions coming from the individual farmers too, because they're not calling us anymore, they're calling you.
You're being on the road.
I just have one question. What if your appropriation doesn't come through? I know that's happened in the past. What happens then? What's your contractor going to say?
Well, these are the kinds of things that we'll have to talk about.
That's kind of a big one for the contractor.
Right.
That's a great point, because historically the district floated it for 3 years with no payments.
The contract's being structured, it would be a 1 year contract with one option. One way of doing it is a 1 year contract with a 1 year option. Another way of doing it would be a 1 year contract with 4 1-year options. And as long as we know we have the funding for 1 year, that's all we're guaranteeing the contractor. And the other years are option years.
Well, this is just my opinion. We've had a system that's worked well for many years. Of course, you've got our little flaws. It seems like we're walking into a big nightmare. That's my opinion.
Yeah, there's it's going to be a challenge, Director.
We don't need it. We don't need that challenge.
I'm sure.
Director.
I suppose this could wait until tomorrow, but I just have to ask you since we're talking about the appropriation. So what you're saying is, when you guys have an appropriation, you're going to hire a contractor. And then when you don't have an appropriation, then the district's going to do it for nothing.
Well,
kind of what it sounds like.
That's what it sounds like. All that happened, Director Sickler, is that the district would continue with their P&P obligations until the situation can be remedied. That's all you're required by law to do.
Director Lincoln.
Thank you. It's evident after months of negotiation meetings that even through all our hard work, we were still quite a bit ways off in terms of what we wanted to be paid. It was, what, 6 months?
Well, $1.8 million was what the district felt the BIA should pay.
Yeah.
The historical invoicing method generated $600,000. So it was between $1.8 million and $600,000.
And I'm going to say that it's unfortunate that it fell apart, but the fact is that I think we all worked really hard to try to understand each other and try to make things work. The Pueblos have been talking about getting a contractor for a long while already, so it doesn't surprise me that they're actually going to move on this now. It does seem a little bit rushed, but the Pueblos have spoken, and I think we, as a board, need to understand that the Pueblos, that's what they want to do. It's their prerogative, right? But I also want to make sure that we, as the Conservancy District, don't neglect our services to them until the new contractor is brought on board.
And Director Veda, coming back to you for a second, I wouldn't sit down this road if I didn't think that we could provide as good a service using this method as what the Pueblos have received, if not even better. I wouldn't do it. I don't want to create unnecessary problems for the Pueblos. I think that the Pueblos, my goal is the Pueblos receive as good a service as they have received, if not better. And we think we can do that. And we think we can create a responsive situation where the contractor is responsive to Pueblos' concerns. And if we didn't think we could do that, I guarantee you, I wouldn't go down this road.
It will be an interesting exercise, and we may learn a lot. I'm sure we will learn a lot.
We'll be a lot of spectators. And so it's, we'll step out and try it. Now, the next thing on my report is the fact that I've accepted a job with your reclamation. And so it sounds like I'm turning this big ship in a certain direction and then I'm jumping ship. But one thing I want to clarify is I talked to my boss before we submitted the paper to procurement. I said, look, you need to be aware, I'm applying for another job. And so I don't know if I'll get it or not, but you need to be aware of that if you want to change the direction of this. And so it wasn't like I sprung this on everybody after we made this decision. I gave a heads up to my boss before this decision was made. And at the time, I didn't know if I'd get the job or not, but I happened to get it. And so my last day here will be August the 12th. And the person that will be acting in my place will be Holly O'Grady. And she'll be acting until either they get a new DE or after, 90 days? And then after 90 days, someone else will begin acting. And so that's the plan there.
Anyone have any questions? Any questions for Randy? Mr. Shaw.
Madam Chair, I mean, just for information, when we're negotiating, that was the first thing we said, when we were willing to negotiate for the amount of how much it would cost.
Right, what you're trying to say is that 1.8 was a starting number, it was not a final number.
Right.
But
it's not like she can talk
about it. It was clear. Right. Yeah, there was a difference in the way the two numbers were presented. That's clear on the record. Anyone else have anything?
Sure.
Yeah, Director Sidney.
I'd just like to say that I think we've had some pretty heated exchanges, but I like you really well, Randy, and I wish you good luck. So.
Thank you, Director Sidney. I appreciate that. It's a tough situation. In our role, it creates tension, but I think when we're not in this setting, I enjoy every one of it. I enjoy SUPAs, every one of it in a personal setting. It's just by the nature of our jobs, there's going to be some tension. So I appreciate God's patience with me.
I think everyone's tried to handle it. I mean, when things get tense, but we've always managed to be professional in the end, and nobody's taken it personally, I don't think. So I think that's a credit to you, and I'm sure you'll do excellent in your new job, just as you have here.
And Director Jared, or Chairman McMullen, Jared, I lost my cool at you in one of the negotiation meetings, and for that I was really sorry. And so I wanted to say it again publicly because my behavior wasn't proper. And so anyway, I appreciate you've already told me we're okay with that. So thank you.
Everybody does that. Every once in a while, it's all right. It's all good. But thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Randy. Next item on the agenda, reports from the Chief Engineer.
Madam Chair, this is in your report. Regarding disposal of obsolete items in the auction. The date has been changed from July 24th to August 21st. The Bentley, who is the one who is an auctioneer, he would be able to perform an auction on August 21st, which would be here at the corner of the street. That's the information.
You don't need the action of the board, just information.
Yes. The next item which we had was follow-up information on Alameda and Ortega regarding those fishing projects. We sent Mr. Erdogan over there, and we talked to Ms. Brown at the time, and explained to her the situation regarding how people do fishing in the area. Mr. Erdogan, you want to mention something, please?
Madam Chair, members of the board, I did meet with Ms. Brown, and we drove the Alameda, the Albuquerque Main Canal, and she voiced her concerns, and basically she was not opposed to anybody fishing. It was just that the individuals that were fishing for the province were leaving their stuff behind. So I explained to her that, that people fish all over the place, and that all we could do is to try to assist in the situation was that I would have the Boston patrol officers ride by and if they encounter anybody, including the ditch runner, if they encounter anybody official, just to talk to them and explain to them, you know, the kind of impact you can bring it in, pack it out, you know, kind of happen, see how that goes. So she was satisfied with that, and are making that effort to run across people to talk to them and educate them so that they don't need to mess behind. Mm-hmm. And she was okay with that.
That's good. Anyone have any comments?
I can do that. I want to thank you for doing that, staff as well, responding really quickly. And, you know, I think it really helped the situation a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, good job.
For sure.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is reports from the attorneys. Mr.
Dumars. I'm chairman of the board. The first item was board resolution on property liens. We did look into this in greater detail, and it turns out that the specific statute requiring the filing of an annual resolution is pretty flexible in the way in which it is framed. But as I pursued this matter, it became pretty clear the resolution is important, that I can explain the details on that. I don't think we need to pass one tonight. But what is clear is that we probably need, the board needs a policy, you know, as to what's the minimum amount that you're going to lien, when do you assess the lien, do you wait 2 or 3 years, do you accrue a certain amount, and then do it more efficiently so that everybody knows that the district is serious about putting the liens of record. So I guess I'd like to combine this report with a discussion of how we currently do the lien, and maybe come up with a policy that the board can consider, so that we can put it out so everybody knows how they operate on the lien, so you don't have somebody saying, well, I know so-and-so, they forgave this lien, and what's the policy on the lien? So they should have a formal policy that really explains how it works, when it attaches, and what it's. So I'm recommending, if it's okay with the board, combine these two items together. Come up at a later meeting, maybe in a couple of meetings after I met again with staff. I did meet with staff today.
Yeah, my question is there a time issue with this?
No, I don't think there is. Given the way I read the statute that we cited before, I think that statute could be raised as in an objection in a certain circumstance involving payback of the United States and contracts, but I'm not worried about that statute. I think we can fix that very easily by basically passing a resolution, putting it on our website, giving people notice. The idea is, if you are out there and you're a property owner, you're concerned about the amount of possible charges on your property when you get the rate. We're very public about the rate, public about our budget, we make it available, because once you get the property tax bill, it's too late to object to the rate. You can say, well, that's a crappy property. You know, yeah, I would sell it twice this, but it's really not worth that. You could argue about the assessed valuation as nothing to do with the district. So that's the issue that was getting to. So I'm not worried from a time constraint that we're going to miss anything. But Shaw, I think it would be good if we could be and come up with some guidelines.
One thing we know for sure is that the state statute, which says that if you don't collect taxes for more than 10 years, and it drops off.
Right.
So we had to worry about that one. But once you put a lien on, I think it's perpetual, so we don't have to worry about getting the money. When they sell the piece of property, we get our money back anyway. No.
So what you're talking about is a resolution, not really a policy.
No, I'm talking about a resolution in the process. The two things. One is the process for starting to collect the liens. When do you put them on people's property? If it costs more to put the lien on than the amount that they're delinquent, if that makes no sense. But I'm talking about a resolution to put everybody on notice once a year. This is our budget. This is what the proposed rate is. So anybody who wants to, you know, if people know what you're doing and be transparent. Yeah, we have it. It goes out, the budget has it. It goes to DFA. I'm just saying to make it clear so that somebody doesn't complain, geez, I never knew that it was going to be the amount of the assessment of the property.
Anyone have any questions for Mr. DeVos?
The second issue, you heard a little bit about the work that we're doing on the data. The other thing, this is with the water utility, we have been hoping to get back from them a response to our letter regarding our proposed storage right in Avenue, and they're working on the JPA. We still have not received anything back from them on that, but I think just the past actions, the past couple of months of activity involving storage and credits and all of that, I think it makes it clear how really important it is just to get our storage right in Avenue shored up with the utility. And I hope to hear back from them. I've been promised to be moved. I'm almost done. I'll get to this, but I have not been back yet. But I just want to let you know that we're still pursuing that.
Thank you,
Chair.
I just had a question. What's the process? I mean, I know there's a lot of questions with the Water Authority and what's going on. So what's the process? You guys just negotiate, just talk back and forth, and then try to work this out, I guess. How do you come about it?
Well, what happens is, basically, I talk to the legal counsel. I can't talk directly to Mark or to John about this issue because they're represented by counsel. And the legal counsel, Shaw can, and Shaw has had some conversations. But basically, I've said, we've got this agreement. We've extended it multiple times. We need to complete it before this one runs out. I've written a letter to that effect. And I got an email back from them, from Jay Stein, their lawyer, saying, I'm working on the JPA, it should be getting to you any time. But I think, frankly, if this doesn't bear fruit, we're going to have to get more aggressive, have the board start working directly with the utility and try to get this thing done, because it is important, it's critical aspect of this one. So right now there's no process, I'm just there. That's it.
Well, I think I understand just the process is you're working with them right now, and then at some point that doesn't pan out. I mean,
that's it.
Put some teeth in it, I guess.
Well, that's it. You know, that's where we are.
Okay.
Anyone else? Okay.
Next item on the agenda, reports from the board. Director Sickler.
I'd just like to see if we could schedule another meeting to be held in Socorro. Maybe sometime in August, one of the meetings in August. I know the people in Socorro really appreciate it, and it was really well attended last year, and I've had some people say that, you know, they have a few things they'd like to voice if we had another meeting in Socorro. So at the pleasure of the board, if we could, you know, one of the meetings next month would work.
If I can ask, the microphones and stuff, that are those in yet for the tech stuff? So maybe, what about if we tried it for the August 23rd meeting to make sure the travel equipment is in place before we went down there? Would that work?
That'd be fine.
That's just a suggestion.
May I ask also, can you suggest a location?
I couldn't, but I might find someone who could.
Okay.
With time to think about it.
Okay. So we'll have the 23rd again.
Yeah, that's fine. If that suits the board, I'd like to make a motion that we hold the meeting of the 23rd of August in Socorro.
I'll get with you later.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That seems good. Next item on the agenda.
Oh,
yes, Mr.
Scott. August 23rd meeting, we would like to add an item on the agenda regarding ex-chairman Gary Payne's honoring Gary Payne.
That would be great. Yeah, because we said we have some stuff here. Absolutely, that would be perfect timing for that.
So we advise his family.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll make sure that happens. That's an excellent suggestion. Anything else on that? Okay. Next item on the agenda is report on emergency BIA negotiations. Director Lindsay, did you have anything you wanted to add to the previous discussion?
No. I think Mr. Shaw went over everything thoroughly, and I think we just got to move forward from here and see what we can do. And going to be an educational process, and two, I'm concerned that the people are going to feel the effects are the farms on the ground. But, we'll get past it. We'll be okay.
I think that's true. I think that it's a shift now from contract negotiations to negotiation regarding how compliant the allocations are required paramount. So it's a shift in what our job is as a negotiating team. And I think we can do it. I think we'll get through it. And I think as long as we have the farmers in the forefront, we'll work out something that'll be very good. And I think the earlier discussion covered it pretty well. Are there any questions from any members of the board?
Madam Chairman.
Yeah, Director Sue.
I'd just like to say I just want to apologize to the board. I intended to, had every intention to attend that meeting, and it just completely slipped my mind. Didn't make it.
I think it happens to all of us, so no worries. Is there a motion to accept the report on the URG's DBI negotiations?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The next item is a report on the Mexico Water Natural Resources meeting, July 21st. Mr. Steve Curtis from LRPA and I attended that. It was scheduled to be from 9:30 in the morning until 12:15. It went till sometime about 2:30 in the afternoon. It was quite lengthy. Most of the comments and the questions seem to be in opposition and raising a lot of questions to the deal. The legislators were somewhat confused. They usually have presentations for this, something of this magnitude going on, I think, for several meetings. And they were a little bit confused, and there were some concerns. There were a few that were in favor of it, but most seemed to have a lot of questions about it. Notably, Senator Michael Sanchez, who's not on the committee, came in toward the end. And as the Senate floor leader, he was allowed to ask questions and ask some very, very definite questions about the source of the contract and where it came from. The district did make comments that just collated the information that the district already had, the two letters, and provided that and some additional comments from the Six Mermaid Pueblos and others that the district knew about into a document, and then had the motion where we were opposed to it's currently written, but we wanted to keep working to figure things out. And that pretty much was the stance of the district there when we were asked. So, but I did, Mr. Curtis left at about, I'm not sure what time he left. He left shortly after we made our comments, because he commented on the legal questions regarding the compact that's what he presented. And he left shortly thereafter, and I stayed till the end of it. And it went on for quite a while. Does anyone have any questions? Director Dunn.
Question. As the church had come to the meeting, but what they agreed to postpone it, but was there, what's the next step? Are they going to have a public hearings, or are they just going to work separately and individually with the groups that had concerns, or how?
That's actually the next item on the agenda. This is the Water and Natural Resources Committee, the legislature. What they wound up doing was the sense of that committee was to ask the ISC to wait and really fully vet it in a very public way if ISC was going to go through with this, that the public process needed to be at the front end, not after the deal was already done. Your question, I think, relates to the ISC meeting and what the ISC decided, which is the next item. But are there any questions about the Water Natural Resources? So that was the interim committee had asked ISC and others to make comments to them. So are there any questions about that?
Okay. I don't have any questions, Madam Chairman. I did listen to the live streaming of the Water Resources Committee. I was disturbed just in the fact that when the chairman got up to speak, she stated her name, and then and went on to say she was there to represent the, she was there as chairman of the MRGCD and was there to represent the board. And went on to discuss the motion that was made, I believe, at the June 21st meeting, where the board said they had some questions about the agreement, and they couldn't support the agreement as it was written, which is true statement. And but there was also a motion made at the July 12th meeting, which stated that the board stated that they did have some questions, but they wanted to hear more about the agreement, and they wished for staff to negotiate this and see if there were things that could be worked out with the agreement. The chairman never bothered to mention that the board had made that motion. Frankly, the chair seems to have had an axe to grind with the ISC on this issue from the very beginning, and that's the appearance that I heard on the live streaming. It seemed like after she reported about the motion on the 21st of June, that she just went on with her same point, saying that the ISC has been unresponsive to the district's questions. And frankly, on 2 days before, at the July 12th meeting, the ISC agreed to answer all our questions. He stated that he had not answered the questions because of the direct conflict that he had with the chairman. He said he would ask his attorney to go ahead and answer the questions to the letter that we had sent out, and they did. I received an electronic copy 2 days before this hearing was held, and the chairman stated that we, as of that time, we had not received answers to those questions. I guess my biggest concern is that as a board member, and what I heard the board say was that we weren't sure if this was a good agreement or not, but we would like to hear more. And the thing's apparently is just dead now. It was killed. I think that's probably was the chairman's goal from things that I've seen. And I think it's going to take a lot of innovative thinking in the future for us to deal with the water issues in Cali. I just heard Dr. Lamar say that Water Authority is going to be diverting 100,000 acre feet a year. That's going to be tough to deal with. We're going to have to start thinking really innovative about the way we do things. And, frankly, I just don't care for the chairman's approach to the way she's handling these issues. And I really don't care for her representing the board if she's not going to represent the board appropriately to the board's wishes. And that's my comments for the time.
Well, I'm going to respond to that because the documents were given over. They were collated by LRPA. Had a specific memo detailing how ISC did not answer the questions in the letters written by Mr. Kurtz from LRPA. So in the legal opinion of general counsel, ISC did not answer the questions in the letters. And the electronic copy that was distributed to the board was not answered by legal counsel. It was over Mr. Lopez's signature, and it was specifically not from legal counsel, and it was not answered in with legal citations and case law. It was not answered in the form of a legal memo, which is what I believe the legal counsel had asked about getting, was a legal opinion of where they get the authority to do this. And I would turn any of this over to any member of the board, but I believe I spoke in truth that they had not, under our legal counsel's opinion, they had not answered the questions the district had asked. I did outline some of the issues that had come up. We also provided the meeting minutes so everyone could see all the comments that were made and the questions that were asked. That was part of the packet that was there. And I did say that the district had questions and wanted to know more because the motion that was there, that was the active motion, the reiteration of it on the 12th, the first motion said specifically that we wanted to have these questions answered and we wanted to continue to engage with ISC. And that was absolutely there and on the record. I think that the director from Socorro has his own axe to grind on this board and is using every opportunity to misrepresent what was said and done. And I think that's most unfortunate for the workings of the board. But everything I said is backed up by legal counsel's opinion.
Madam Chair.
Director Sickler.
Well, I guess just the question I have to ask is, when did the board ask you to attend this meeting and represent the board? The board's position on this item.
I was asked to do this by legal counsel and by Mr. Shaw, because Mr. Shaw had a conflict and couldn't go, and I assumed that he was going to go there. It was also a fact that the legislative committee expected someone to go and speak for the MRGCD, because we had the written letters that were out there. Just as there was someone there for EBID and CID, the major irrigation districts, and a lot of other impacted water users. There were people there from all those groups that had questions.
But that, so you should have been there, I guess, representing not the board.
I was speaking as the chairman of the board, reading from minutes.
Well, you spoke as chairman.
Can do that.
Chairman of the board. You said that I am Janet Jarrett, chairman of the board, and I'm here to represent the board's view on this issue. So that's what I heard.
And I read the content from the minutes.
Well, I guess it's just my opinion. I guess others could go back and listen to the meeting themselves if they.
I think that would be a terrific idea. That would be great. Because I think this is a personal vendetta that you have, and I think it's most unfortunate for the operations of the district, because there are many times when the chairman is asked to do things that fall outside of board meetings.
Madam Chairman, the district is my livelihood, and the district means an awful lot to me. The last thing I want to see is this district drug down into the dirt, but, so we don't have any friends left in this, in the middle of the rainbow. You know?
It's not your livelihood anymore than it's mine.
Well, it is my livelihood, and we've made bad inroads with ISC now. I'm afraid we're going to do the same with the. If you're involved, I'm afraid we're going to do the same with the city of Albuquerque. I think you've had a lawsuit with the city of Albuquerque, so I have a concern with that. It may be an ongoing lawsuit on this very issue, so I'm not sure if you're the proper person to be dealing with the issue that we're coming up with here. That's my point for bringing this up, is that I think we could have handled this a whole lot better instead of dragging ISC through the dirt. I think we should have handled this as somebody that's a partner. You know, we have the Senator Sanchez threaten to cut off funding for the ISC. How did that help the district if ISC can't cooperate in the ESA Collaborative Work Group? Of all people, you should know we need the ESA Collaborative Work Group. I was a skeptic of that group. After being on this board, I understand how important it is. They're one of the only friends we have on that board. We need them. And frankly, I think they're probably reluctant to work with the district now. That's my opinion. I have nothing personal against anybody on this board. There is nothing personal here. I am strictly here to look out for the interests of the district and the irrigators and the other constituents which I represent. And that's where it ends.
As am I. And I'm very familiar with ISC, and they're professionals, and understand that the ESA Collaborative Program depends on all the non-federal partners, including the MRGCD. ISC does not carry that bag alone, and I think that it is inappropriate for the ISC to come to the district and offer water to make us go away on a deal. And that is what they did. And I think that that's something else that's not very appropriate to do. And I think that, you know, the question comes for the district. If you care about the district, and as I do, and care that my kids have an opportunity to continue on in agriculture, that we need to be thinking about the future, not next year, but 10 or 20 years from now, and how we're going to be able to maintain that. And that is my concern, is the long-term strategies of making sure there's wet water in the river. And threats by ISC are exactly that. And I can't tell you what the deal is, but Mr. Lopez has made it clear that he's not going to be in that position for much longer, and so I think that that any indication that I am not looking out for the best interests of farmers and the agriculture in this valley to the best of my ability or that I have any personal vendetta is patently ridiculous, and I think Mr. Lopez would tell you quite openly that I have no personal vendetta with him whatsoever, and it worked well on a number of issues for the last 8 years in the ESA collaborative program. With that, I'm going to move on. Is there a motion to set the report on water and natural resources meeting? Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Last item is report on ISS.
I'd like to, while we're on that issue, on that item, I'd like to make a motion as well. I'd like to make a motion that no individual board member, including officers of the board, shall at any time imply the representation of the board, of the full board, on any item without prior direction of the majority of the board to do so.
Is there a second?
I second that.
Discussion?
Yes.
Was
it last summer? I was asked by staff to attend a little award ceremony. And I thought I was chastised by the chair for not letting her know. And that came up, and she told me she wished that I had informed her that I was going to this event. And I remember that particular incident. So that's just my comment. I'm going to bring that up.
Well, I think that one was, it was, I'd asked Mr. Shaw to let me know. But that was fine either way. I thought she did my job. I didn't know she care about one way or the other. Director Dunn.
Because this isn't on the agenda, is this motion okay?
Madam Chair, good evening. I think it involves simply the procedural operations of the board. I think it's within the scope of the meeting. I don't know that it changes policy or whatever has been in the past. I don't think it's been the case that board has anybody has been authorized to vote. Nobody, to my knowledge, has not been the board's position that individuals go out and represent the board without having approval of the board. So I'm not sure it changes existing policy at all. I don't think it's outside the scope of the Meetings Act, but it really talks about procedural operations. I don't see a change in policy. Most of you, I think any board member, the chairman, or any person is not going to allow that. They are representing the board. It's not for me having minutes and going to a board meeting, because that's happened here in the past. So I don't see it as a significant change at any time. If you're concerned about it, you could do it at the next board meeting, because if you look down the items of the agenda, remember, Dunning, you're correct, there's nothing about procedural representations of the chairman or other board members outside the meeting, outside minutes, outside the actual formal board meeting without approval. So there's probably no specific item that covers that. So to be ultra-conservative, you go that route. But I don't see it as a change in the policy really that much. It's up to the board, I guess. My view is be conservative. You can do it next time. It's a motion that describes what I think has always been the policy. I don't recall board members doing things that were not authorized by the meeting board member or the chair. Frankly. So it's up to you. I guess my conservative advice, the reason I'm saying this, is that I saw yet another Open Meetings Act complaint against somebody over the smallest item coming out of the Attorney General's office. I don't know if it's an election year, I'm not going to bother with anyone who's in it, but I think it might be wise to the conservative view would be simply quick to the motion the next time you've got that would probably be the best, but I don't think it's that big a change in policy. That it doesn't really matter. To my way of thinking, you could do it or not. A conservative approach would be to do it at the next meeting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we do move this issue to the next meeting, Chuck, I'm just wondering, can we get some clarification? I can't recite it from memory, but we have, or at least I have served on a prior board in which someone was very blatant about misrepresenting themselves. And so I guess I would like to know, and for all of our sake, that kind of clarification. And I'm not suggesting, Director Sipa, that you would wait. If you want to have this vote on tonight, I'm fine with that too. But I'm just wondering if there is something in our policies that there's got to be something that says you can't go out and stand on a corner and say you're a board member and do.
We have a specific resolution that was directed at one board member saying you shall not do that without a pencil. So that's out there, but his was really very specific. He had a specific motion that he said he wanted. And frankly, it's in the board's discretion, but a conservative view would be to simply put it in the minutes, basically put it in the agenda as an item, discuss it. I don't think it'll take a lot of discussion to pass it, but that's what the board wants.
Madam Chairman,
yeah,
I thought about the Open Meetings Act before I made the motion, and I think my motion has a lot to concern with what goes on after, outside of board meetings, and that's why I thought it would be appropriate under the, we've got a report concerning the meeting. That's what my issue was with this meeting, so I think I'd just assume go ahead and vote on it. That's my opinion.
So I have a question. For instance, at the Route 66 ribbon cutting, I was asked to go and speak and make some comments about that issue. But that's just one example of several things I'm asked. Now, I'm asked to do all kinds of things, but that's one example. So I guess the question is, does that mean that something like that would go before the board? Or does that mean the comments would be vetted? Or what does that mean, Mr. Shaw, something?
Madam Chair, I've been here 30 years and worked for different boards. Normally the board has allowed me or the chief engineer to make some decisions because some of the issues deal with particular county. For example, we had some issue with the Bernalillo Public School. So we talked directly to Director Lente, and some of the issues come up in different counties. So I do that quite often. And I wish you guys keep me at least that much authority to talk to board members and at least invite them because it may really affect them. And that's what I was doing for lots of years. Recently, I have been doing that thing because I've been asked by you that I should tell you everything what I do on those kind of issues. I mean, issues regarding the board members. So, I just want to get some clarification from the board that would you let me do what I was doing before, which would involve particular people from within that county, which would have some direct impact on it. And then we make a report at the next board meeting.
I think that's what.
And same thing I asked you for the Route 66 also, because there was no time to call all the board members to go there.
That was a timing issue.
Yes.
Yeah, because you had asked me if I could make it. But the issue you're talking about was one where there was the concerns around the Whitfield site, and there were meetings down there that you had with Fish and Wildlife Service and Soil and Water Conservation District and. What I think Audubon was down there, and it was not very many miles from my house, and didn't inform it. That's why I requested that if there's something happening in each board member's, whosever county it's happening in, you let them know that there's something like that because it's their county. Had nothing to do with the chair.
I do a lot of different areas. I do that, and every little thing, but I keep informing you, I'll be calling you on the call all the time. I know.
The Whitfield site was a big deal, and there are big deals in Sandoval County. And I mean, you certainly been good about letting Director Lentino about interacting with some of the Pueblo issues up there. And I think that's as it should be. Just as there are the issues around Santa Casia and the siltation down there, you involve Director Sickler and Director Baker. It's very appropriate.
If I think something is very important for the board members to know, I will definitely do so.
Madam Chairman, my motion didn't include staff. I think it just included individual board members. In other words, an individual board member isn't to go to attend a meeting or an event and speak on policy or issues concerning the district and claim that they represent the full board, unless the board has sent them there specifically to do that. I don't have an issue with the board sending someone to do something. I don't have an issue with somebody attending the ribbon cutting. I have an issue with board members attending very important meetings such as this one and others, and making statements and people taking that statement to be meant as they're speaking for the board when they're only speaking for themselves. That's the intent of my motion.
Is there any further discussion? Director Dunn.
Is there a way that, and I actually, my preference would be to wait and vote on this at the next meeting, but if we vote on it tonight, you know, there's a difference between, and I think you just tried to allude to this, between doing something that's essentially like public testimony as opposed to doing sort of PR stuff. And so I just want to make sure that it's clear that it's the public testimony stuff we're talking about, because we don't have a PIO, and I don't have a problem with board members helping out with public relations stuff by having a presence at ribbon cuttings, or so there's some way you can differentiate between something, and I don't know if it's public testimony, if that's the way we differentiate, but I mean, I really do think that there's a difference, and I don't really want to tie board members. And the reason I don't is because between board meetings, if there's something Mr. Shaw can't go to it, you know, he might want a board member, and then a board member says, well, I can't go and say anything because I'm not directed by the board, and they're, I mean, we have to be careful, I think, not to tie the hands of the district in terms of, you know, our ability to do public relations.
Madam Chairman,
Director,
I think I can comply with Director Dunning's request if I could withdraw my motion and restate it. If I have the permission of the board to do so.
You can always withdraw a motion.
Okay, I'd like to restate my motion. Inform that no individual board member, including officers of the board, shall at any time comply with representation of the board while presenting public testimony of policy of the board without prior direction of the majority of the board to do so.
So I have a question. Does that mean if a board member is at a community, for example, and they're asked about what the policy is on, say, the ridge policy, you know, the policy of the board, can they inform the community about that, or do they have to not do that? I mean, because there are things like that arise a lot in public meetings. I think we all go to our neighborhood meetings and those kinds of things. Ask questions about the district.
Madam Chairman, I think under that situation, I would probably respond to my constituents that policy, as I understand it, is such, not as the board says it is.
I just want to make a comment. I also don't consider going to a neighborhood meeting public testimony. I think by putting public testimony in there, it sort of implies that something recorded, it's, you know, and that actually satisfies my concern.
Some of us are newspaper reporters at those neighborhood meetings. That happens.
Yeah, but that's not public testimony, I don't
think. Madam Chair, just to be clear, in public testimony are where that is words of art. It's describing the kind of thing that happens when you're before a legislative committee or when you're at a city council meeting. Was that your intent in your motion? Or what is it? I want to make sure so we get that down.
Well, I think since we're including the chairman in this motion, it needs to be not only public testimony, but any meetings or any negotiations of policy with other public officials. So, I don't know. It's getting very complicated now, so I have to...
Public testimony and negotiations?
Yes.
any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Next item on the agenda, report on the ISC meeting. To answer your earlier question, Director Dunham, basically what they did was they did an indefinite deferment or acknowledge your report. And then there was a motion made to ask the ISC to move forward with doing allocation criteria for allocating that work. And how that's going to be done isn't clear. I think that, Dr. Dumars may have some things to add to that.
I think the clear import of the second motion, the first one simply was, it was an orchestrated motion to postpone this definitely. That has happened in that opposition. The second one was to direct the director, which would have been Mr. Lopez, to adopt criteria for determining who gets the allocated credit water for allocation, which is one of the major criticisms of everybody, that there was no, it was appeared to be arbitrary or at the sole discretion of the state engineer, who's the compact commissioner. So that was, and so my, what I expect will happen is that he will come up with some criteria. I'm hopeful he will involve everybody this time in the development of that criteria. And then when they go before the board, they've had the Pueblos consulted, everybody's consulted, and it's not a unilateral decision, but rather a collective decision that involves the consideration of everybody's viewpoint. Because I would mention that at that meeting, there were many, many people prepared to testify against that proposal. The district was only one. There was both of the CID and the irrigation district. There were many. There were a lot of entities, including Pueblos Council and others. All of them were there prepared to present testimony. It wasn't clear what the district was going to say anything, but we were able to observe what happened. And they didn't. I think that they realized that the pure to step in very quickly and take the position that there's absolute power in one person to decide who gets the credit water without criteria is not an appropriate way to approach this problem. That was my impression. That's why the director didn't pick the top. So, and that will be a rulemaking. My guess is it better be a rulemaking, and people will get to have input, and then we'll see how you see that public process through.
So is it your impression, as Director Sickler was, I think you said you thought it was dead in the water, or that this was the end. Is that your impression that now it'll go away, or do you think that they'll move forward with coming up with criteria and politically? What's your sense of
it? I don't have any sense of it. I was I was stunned. I was out of state for the Natural Resources Committee meeting. I'm sorry that I wasn't, but I was. And I was frankly stunned at the way in which it went. It was very clear that they were not pleased with the way it had been packaged. They weren't pleased with the action. And so if I were a member of that staff, I would be very concerned that they seemed to be directed against their own staff. So I don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen. But I know it's not going to go forward until they've had a full vetting of all of the ownership issues and allocation criteria. And I'm hopeful that once they start that process, the district is a major player in determining what the criteria should be, because that's been the district's position. And that will unpackage, whether it's in the context of Intel. Intel may just be one example in the future of how they choose to allocate.
Madam Chairman,
Director,
you corrected if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding once the ISC pulled out of this agreement, the city, the Water Utility Authority, basically picked it up and provided water to Intel. So I think that probably provides problems for the district itself. I've been told that the Water Utility Authority said they would provide water to the Intel in exchange for the 756 acre feet of water, and the return credit would go to the return credit of Intel would go to the Water Utility Authority.
If
I said I could be corrected if I'm wrong. I heard that from a reliable source. And,
could be, but if you're one thing that did come out of Water and Natural Resources was that the Water Utility Authority was in opposition to the Intel contract because they believe they have a claim on some of that water. And there were some specific questions asked that what I heard was, while the Water Utility Authority does not get credit for the return flow credits, so that the 2,500 or so acre feet that is returned to the river, that was a return flow credits for Intel. And the Water Utility Authority processes that but gets nothing for it, but believes that they have, Jay Stein in his testimony said that the Water Utility Authority has the ability to take that 2,500 or so acre feet and not return it to the river, but rather to use it in a reclamation project or for surface irrigation. Project like that, and that they could do that. Well, the day they did something like that, all of Intel's water rights come due. So I think there were a lot of things in the mix because that came out of that testimony and seemed to be that there was questions regarding the newspaper article where Mr. Stein made similar type comments that the Water Utility Board was opposed to this contract for those reasons. So, I mean, I don't doubt that what you say, Director Sigler, may be true, but I think there's a lot at work there because the INC's agreement wasn't going to be completed for several years. And the Water Utility Authority, based on Jay Stein's commentary, had a pretty big hammer over Intel to make a deal if they had stopped returning that to the river, which Jay Stein asserted that they had that power. I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, I have relayed this to legal counsel who had other opinions on that, but I think there was a lot at work in this contract besides just the irrigation districts.
Chair, Intel is a huge company. They don't make precipitous decisions. They're like a gigantic aircraft carrier. They have to go up through all kinds of chains of command. Whether Albuquerque supplies their water, whether Rio Rancho might be a supplier, what they may do, I don't think anybody, you can't really tell at this time, but there are always rumors that someone came up to me after the meeting and said, well, I think Intel might supply the water, and I said, well, I don't know anything about that. I mean, that Albuquerque might supply Intel, I've heard nothing about any of that, but you know, we could only speculate as to what might actually happen.
Madam Chairman, you know, it's very possible I misspoke and probably my remarks should be disregarded.
They may be very true.
The very well may
be. It makes sense.
I don't know.
It makes sense. Are there any other issues from the board? Mr. Shopkin.
Madam Chair, I guess the last one thing the board has authorized us to talk to ISC. So just keep on continuing and talk to them and see what we can find out more about it.
My personal opinion would be certainly, particularly now if we're going to look at allocation criteria, it's even more important for you to be discussing it with them.
Okay. And second question, can I still continue to do what we were doing before, that we allow talk to some board members if they have some issues in their own county or something related to that, so we can call on them and ask them?
I don't think Director Sigler's motion impacted that.
Okay,
so that's fine. Did you intend for it to?
No, I did not.
No, I didn't hear the impact.
Thank you.
Anyone else have anything? Is there a motion for adjournment? So moved. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We need adjourned.